Hello, friends. This is Brett. Today is Monday, May 31st. It is Memorial Day. I know that because I'm looking out a window. I'm in a new space, and I'm up at the top of a hill, and I can look out my window, and I can see many, many miles, and there are numerous fireworks displays going off in the distance. It's quite lovely. It's been a nice ending to an eventful day that involved some plumbing problems and some car problems. But Mercury is in retrograde, as they say. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are like, it doesn't matter if Mercury is in retrograde or not, but they're wrong. It screws things up. So an interesting intersection of events brings us to day one of Discomfort Week. I have lamented before that I go back and I look at some of these shows that I've created for our supporting listeners, either through Patreon or Locals or the AV Club. And there's links in every show notes for how to get involved in that if you like, if you would like to support us. But this isn't about that. And I get frustrated when I see that some of these great shows only have 150, maybe 200 downloads just because they haven't been made available to everybody in the audience. Now, I have built The Discomfort Zone, a personal development show, a very revealing personal development show often that I do with my friend Andrew, and we pretty regularly at this point bring in a third person to hear about their discomforts and hopefully try to alleviate some of them. Not that discomfort is bad. That's what this week is all about, discomfort being a benefit. But I think in the entire history of doing The Discomfort Zone, which dates back to 2018, I've only ever made two of them public. It's a shame. I really feel like this could be a podcast on its own. I feel like some of the greatest and some of the most helpful and healing conversations that I've had have been Discomfort Zone content. I think co-host Andrew would agree. Supporting listeners rave about The Discomfort Zone. And I would say it is the best supporter-only show in all of bonus podcasting out there right now. That is conjecture. There might be a better one that I don't have access to because I don't support another show and I can't see what's behind their paywall. So there's some availability bias there. But I'm pretty sure this is up there. And I will also say it is one of the most entertaining personal development focused shows on the internet. But very few people get to hear it, and that dismays me. Also, for our Universiti, that's our private community, we do a book club every month. And our next book is called The Upside of Your Dark Side, which focuses on, among many things, harnessing and making useful negative emotions, which was kind of like the spirit of The Discomfort Zone when we started it. And this book, even though it's retreading over a lot of familiar territory for me, it's having quite an impact. And I'm really looking forward to the group discussion that we're going to be having about it this Saturday, which I think is June 5th. And I'm like, gosh, I want to do more content like this. Oh, wait a f***ing minute. I've done a lot of content like this. And I didn't know what I was going to be able to get out this week because I have a couple of projects that are in preparation stage. Nathan and I are planning the next emotional manipulators for hire currently. We're going to be recording that soon. I'm also going to be bringing Daryl Becker back to the show to do a follow-up to our This Is a Test series that I talked about in a recent podcast episode called Follow the Science. And both of those shows require some preparation and research, and they will be along soon. But in this lull, I thought I would go through and curate some of the finest episodes of The Discomfort Zone and release them to you this week. I think I'm going to do at least one from each season, and there are four seasons. The fourth season is currently in progress. They're not the most revealing episodes. In fact, I had to edit some revealing stuff out of the one you're about to hear. But when I say curate, I mean I wanted to find ones that I felt would have a value for a lot of people in the audience. So I tried to find ones that were a little less personal and a little more based in principle. So this first one is a good example. It's called The Split Personality of Entrepreneurship. It is about an old book called The E-Myth, Why Most Small Businesses Fail. I thought it was something that many of you would find useful, even if you're not a small business person, just about the different hats that we have to wear as creative professionals or knowledge workers. And I know there's a lot of people in the audience who fit that description. So another tie-in to discomfort. 1 week from today, Nathan Fraser and I are going to be hosting a virtual summit called Mindset and Mastery. And Mindset and Mastery is about confronting. That sounds uncomfortable, doesn't it? Confronting some of the internally imposed and externally imposed self-limiting programs, and then the installation of new helpful replacement programs, and there are still plenty of spots available. And part of Discomfort Week is about celebrating the kind of exercise that we are going to be engaging in next Monday and Tuesday, about noon to 3 Eastern time each day, Monday and Tuesday. That's June 7th and June 8th. And like I said, there are plenty of spots left. So if you want to attend Mindset and Mastery, go to mindsetandmastery.com. You can read about the program that we've put together, and you can enroll. And I hope some of the conversations that you're going to hear this week on the School Talks podcast from the Discomfort Zone inspire you to want to get involved in that. And if you've never heard the Discomfort Zone, lucky you, huh? This is going to be a great week. And I think you're going to learn a lot, not just about me and co-host Andrew. We also do another show together called Portman Show with our friend James, but forget I even said that. It's not for you. But I hope it gives you an opportunity to get uncomfortable and to learn a lot about yourself. The whole genesis of this, honestly, was looking at the download counts on SoundCloud and going, oh, good heavens, I'd like it if more people heard these. So that's what's happening this week. But then I realized that this is just filled with benefits for all of us. So please remember to check out mindsetandmastery.com, and Nathan and I hope to see you next Monday. All right, this was recorded back in January of 2019. The title of this Discomfort Zone was Season 1, Episode 9, The Split Personality of Entrepreneurship. Thanks for listening, and take care.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the first Discomfort Zone of 2019. And during this meeting, meeting number 9, Brett and I are back together in person.
Mm.
Much better than last time.
Sitting right across the table from each other.
I am not hunched over my laptop in a bedroom with no chair like I was last time, because I had to plug directly into the internet to get good enough quality.
I was sitting on a bed.
So
you feel
I.
so stupid just sitting on a bed.
Yeah.
Like, beds are for sleeping. Then you get up. You know, there's something very emo about just sitting on a bed.
And you're just talking in a room by yourself, a closed room.
It is. And then somebody opens the door, and there you are just talking, sitting on the bed.
Right. It's one thing if you're in an office talking.
About your discomforts, by
right,
the way.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's black. I don't know if it's white. I don't know if it's girl. I don't know if it's boy.
Pretty eventful 10 days or almost 2 weeks since our last recording.
Yeah.
A lot of travel for me. Had one of the best weekends of my life,
That's
I would say.
That's in stark contrast to your mood and attitude last time.
Yeah, and I think I was also left with some accountability from the last meeting that we could get into today. But how would you say you punched the world in the dick this time?
Rolling bookings in for the business and feeling very entrepreneurial and accomplished for the past year.
Mm. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm reading this book that you recommended to me called The E-Myth. It's an old book. I think it was written in the mid-90s, or at least revised in the mid-90s.
Yeah, I think originally it was from the late 70s and then revised in the 90s.
Right. It's Why Most Small Businesses Don't Work and What to Do About It. Reading it, I feel not so entrepreneurial. I feel more like a technician.
Explain what that means.
I like being a technician. We're gonna get it. So he kind of breaks up the person who goes into business for himself into three personalities, right? And this is like a really, really impactful part of this book. There's a technician who is somebody who likes to do the work so much so they say, I don't want to do this work for anyone else. I want to do this work for myself. I want to go into business.
Analogous to a craftsman
making pies.
Mm-hmm. That's the through line for the entire book.
Yeah.
The narrator is speaking to a woman who owns a small business, a pie making company.
Right.
Or a pie shop, I guess. And she absolutely hates it.
So one of the things that's out of date in this book is like the concept of the solopreneur, like somebody who can basically work for themselves. Sorry, let's use him. For himself, by himself, is much more possible Because like this book was updated just at a time where it became possible to break away from brick and mortar businesses and do things online.
Right. But the flip side of that is there's a whole bunch of, you know, wantrepreneurs.
Yeah. And I think there's principles in this book that, that still apply. So what I realized is, interestingly enough, I just finished about the first third of the book. We'll talk about it a little bit today, and then we'll do a follow-up when I've read the whole thing. The three parts of the person who goes into business for himself, the technician, the manager. So like once you start to grow a little bit, you need to manage a business, and then the entrepreneur, right? And most people never really get to that big picture phase. I mean, I started doing what I was doing as a hobby, and then it was monetized. So I never had a big picture. I had like a way far out vision of the impact I wish I could have in the world, but I had no plan between where I was and that thing. It was very lofty. You know, I just figured it was some, this is like 500 years away. That absolves me of the responsibility of, you know.
But it's not to say that, you know, the big picture thinking, the entrepreneurial thinking is the only thing that's going to get you to where you want to be. These
of course,
three
yeah.
different types of people that all kind of live within one. For the solo entrepreneur, they're all equally important in their own way,
mm-hmm.
in a very strong way. And I think every individual is going to be stronger in one category than another, or completely absent in a category.
Right, right. So, yeah, it's been an enlightening read so far, and it helps me kind of plot myself in this whole map that the author Michael Gerber lays out. I guess back to my did I really punch the world in the dick? I'd say punch my life in the vag a couple of times that were nice that might lead to a situation where I could punch a world in the dick.
That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't?
You punched your life in the vag.
Well, let me tell you about it.
Okay.
All right. So I did two things this week that I'm particularly proud of. First of all, I just rolled back into town. I would say, was it Monday? I think it was Monday afternoon. I got back into town. And
we immediately recorded Puke in the Gang.
We did. And I also finally found a solution to my dry erase problem, turning most of one wall. I actually put it in my bedroom. So it's the first thing I see when I wake up in the morning. Then I realized now when I wake up in the morning, it's pitch black dark. So, but I can look at this layout. It's sort of like a map of my entire life on a giant dry erase board that's about 40 inches up and down and 84 inches wide. So I've mapped the website. I've mapped the projects for this year, the two big new projects that I want to work on. I've also done like a habit map and like a long-term goals map on this dry erase board. So I'm really happy with this. I like to look at it. I like to optimize it. And it's actually helped me communicate some of the things I need to do better to the people who are helping me do them. So it has a utility too. It's not just jacking off. But I really needed, like what I have with Evernote, I really needed like a visual of it. So I can see how different things work together and I can, on certain aspects or certain projects, spring into action better. But it's also like I have this note card, index card system that are just like push pin index cards into it so I can move them around as I need. I can take one into the office and talk about it on the phone with somebody.
Yeah, I touched a stack of them last week, and you immediately said, put those back. Like, I moved them a foot to the left.
Well, okay. That's, I guess, a future pain point we can talk about. Sounds like a problem.
But I just thought of a great way to enhance your whole whiteboard system.
Mm-hmm.
Get three more whiteboard panels, put them on the ceiling, and just draw on the one. So this is the absolute first thing you see when you wake up, because you're in bed looking at the ceiling.
Hey!
On the left one, there's a fist.
Okay.
The middle one is the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one on the right is a dick.
And that like kind of sets the tone for the day.
Exactly. What better way to start the day?
Right. The other thing, speaking of starting the day, I have been the kind of man who just rolls out of bed when it's convenient.
Yeah.
You know, I like consistency. Like, I'd like to get up every day by 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
I had this terrible incident. I think I talked to you about it, maybe on the discomfort zone, where one day I didn't get enough sleep. I was up super late. And then I woke up the next morning at like 8 and tried to meditate and then fell back asleep and
yes.
woke up at 11.
Yeah.
That was horrifying. So I agreed that part of our new, it's not a New Year's resolution because we've been working out for a while, but we would start going to the gym first thing in the morning, especially right now where the gym is filled with people who you know, just showed up there in January as part of some New Year's resolution. So the place has been packed even when we go, but we've been getting there at 6:15 in the morning. I've never done this before in my entire life.
Yeah.
The earliest I had ever worked out was probably like 10 a.m. Anytime previously in my life. So now, you know, yesterday, Monday, whatever day we started.
Tuesday.
I'm doing deadlifts within an hour of waking up. I'd never do squats yesterday within an hour of waking up, or the day before yesterday. I've never done that. So I feel accomplished, like this is something that I just always dreaded.
Mm-hmm.
And now I actually look forward to it. So it's still taking me, I think it's going to take some time to figure out how the rest of the day works out after that. Because usually, like, after I go to the gym, I'm done working.
Yeah, you need to find a way to shift back into work after the gym as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And that's a problem that I am facing with going to the gym in the morning, is I get home and I go, oh, well, I didn't have coffee before the gym. Sometimes I can get coffee before the gym,
mm-hmm.
but not always. So I go, well, now I got to make coffee, and I'm really hungry. I also want to shower.
This is becoming the thing, coffee or food, yeah.
Yep. So if I can get that coffee made quickly, then I can just jump into work right then and there. Make the coffee, the bulletproof coffee with all the calories and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just sit there and drink my coffee and just jump on my planner first and then get into my day.
Right.
Or in some cases, just hit the road. Right. In those cases, it's a bit tougher because I got to go home, shower, head out the door.
Right, right.
Get food on the road. But yeah. I just need a plan for that. That's all.
Yeah. And that's something that I've just, tried to accept, that every day is a little different, and as long as I do these things each day and set some goals and achieve them, that means the day can be a success. I don't need to be so bound to specific routines. It's been really helpful, but this has been a nice way to start the day for sure.
And one thing that I'm going to always struggle with going to the gym that early in the morning is, and I've talked about it before, that morning time, like pre 8 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
before the rest of the world starts working, that is my most productive time. And now the majority of that time is going to the gym.
Yeah, but I also think, because I'm new to this, I'm seeing that as kind of an opportunity where the most time-consuming commitment that I usually have, because I don't have like to travel like you do. Like, you could have a time-consuming commitment that's like 4 hours, 6 hours, depending on where you have to go to meet with somebody for your job. The gym is the single biggest block of time. Driving to the gym, coming home from the gym, being at the gym. Now all taken care of before the sun even rises.
Yeah.
And that's something, now being taken care of before I even get up, which isn't just good for work, it's also good for life balance, because I can be done with work by 4 o'clock, you know? And then I have the rest of the day, which is now only 6 hours. I was in bed last night before 10 o'clock, which is interesting. To myself, to read, to watch shows, to make myself a nice dinner and relax, and maybe like get away from the computer, this perpetual, like, always can be working, so time doesn't really matter problem. Yeah, that's that. I like external impositions on my time.
One thing I've noticed over the past few weeks of morning gym is I am finding myself working later into the day, which is a good thing. Because I always had a problem of staying focused and motivated sitting in front of the computer. But now time goes by and it's later into the evening and I look at the clock and it's not like, oh, how long until I can feel okay about being done? Now it's, oh, it's already 7-something. If I want to get food and get to bed, I better stop now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always feel okay about stopping.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing before we get into, pain points, and I would yield time to you this week, because I know, like, the last one we talked almost entirely about what was happening in my family while I was home and how that was very distressing for me. Just some follow-up quickly. I was happy that I had those conversations. Can I tell you one more quick story?
Yeah, because absolutely.
I'm not going to be able to tell this on my show. I had dinner with an ex-girlfriend named she was a girl that I broke up with 11 years ago. After she cheated on me with one of our neighbors. And it was the most...
The plumber?
The plumber.
Mm.
This is a story I've told on Puke in the Gang.
I think,
right? I don't think I've ever talked about this on my show. God, this was the end of 2007. It was the most devastating thing that had ever happened in my life. I was, maybe 30. I was 30. And I was just like, oh, I'll never find anybody. I'm a loser. This is terrible. And I totally pushed her into this other guy's arms just by being neglectful and not a good boyfriend. And I realized that now. But I remember how bad that felt. I can't remember how it felt, but I can remember, you know what I mean? Like, I can't experience the pain of that anymore.
Right, but you realize how much it had you fucked up.
I can see myself from the outside as just, like, so miserable at that time. And really in a dark place in a lot of ways. So over years, like, we eventually sort of reconciled things and we became friends and we hung out a couple of times. And she has had this pattern where she gets involved with a guy. It lasts about 3 years and then she breaks up with him or does something to end the relationship. So here she is at the 3 year mark with another guy who she just broke up with. And she's also a monkey brancher. Do you know what monkey branching is? It's something that women do.
No.
I guess guys could do it too, but it's like a term that was, it's more of like one of those red pill Roosh V kind of men versus women, like women are the problem, that whole scene. Monkey branching is when somebody isn't happy in a relationship, so they won't let go of the branch they're swinging off of until they have the other hand on the next branch.
Oh, to grab something else. Yep.
Right. So we've known people like this for sure.
Yeah.
And you know, this has been her pattern where she's kind of like casually setting up or looking at what options are in the future before she finally separates from somebody else. So she'd actually started seeing another guy as she was breaking up with this past guy. Well, we're eating dinner and she tells me this guy listens to the podcast because she's told him about me and that we're friends. And I said, get him here.
Okay.
So we go to a bar and we sit there. Now they're drinking.
I love this, by the way.
I advised against doing. I said, this is not, but I actually like mediate their conflict that they're having now because he's all jealous. Wait.
This guy is the original monkey branch for the 3 years?
The original monkey branch.
Okay, so not the new monkey branch.
The new branch is, its integrity is questionable. And I'm saying that maybe the reason why you're still holding on to this old branch is you don't know what's in the future, but you're excited about this next branch. So you kind of want to keep grasping on and you're in this really difficult place. So he sits there. Now, he and I get along great. We commiserate and identify a lot of problems, you know? It's okay to say? Did I say her name already?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm chuckling because I just envision you and this guy both lamenting her issues while she just sits there and has to, you know, put up with it. It's kind of two versus one sort of.
It was that, but I was also trying to be fair. You know, she said like this guy drinks too much. I know what that's like. I sat there for a couple of hours and participated in this. But this isn't the first boyfriend of hers that I've met. I obviously knew the guy she cheated on me with because he was our neighbor before that happened, and we hung out. And I encouraged her to hang out with him because I thought his name was John. I thought he was a doof. So I was like, yeah, go hang out with John.
Right.
So that backfired. Even though it all was for the best. And then her next boyfriend, I met him when they were breaking up. Her and I met for dinner. She was monkey branching into some other thing. They still live together. I went to their house. I sat with him and her in their living room. And it wasn't like to the same level of like counseling them about what was happening. But there were definitely things where it's like, yeah, she does do that. And she was sitting there just kind of like shaking her head, but with a smile on her face, knowing that she does do that. So,
I mean, there's something to be said for being able to admit to that or kind of fess up to, you know, those types of things.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that she started to identify is that, you know, I'm appreciative of this. She sees me as somebody who has a lot of wisdom and somebody who knows her well and somebody whose opinion she values. And that's nice when you spend 3 years of your life with somebody in a situation like that. And a decade later, they're still looking to you for advice. It feels good. But the thing, and I've said this to her, the thing that's best about this for me, I mean, she's a great person. She's really funny. She's cool. Is that the relationship that I have with her today, compared to 11 years ago, reminds me that time eventually heals the worst things.
It really does.
Yeah.
You know, real quick, kind of my version of this is I have a friend who we've talked about on a bonus show. We actually had her call in, Amy, like first girlfriend back in high school kind of thing, disconnected for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And back then when we were teenagers, it was nothing but drama. But now fast forward, she's one of my best friends. She has her flaws. I have mine. we can identify them and point them out to each other. But when we hang out, we provide advice to each other. We go to each other with our problems. And it's actually a really nice relationship that years ago I thought could never possibly exist.
Right. Yeah. So that was one of the highlights of being home for me was having that connection. And I think, you know, this guy at the end, we hugged. Like he seemed really appreciative that I was willing to do that. And I don't know if I helped or not, but it felt really good. It felt like a really good thing.
I don't think it could have hurt.
No, I don't think so.
I don't know that it changed the course of anything that was going to happen, but right. I bet it was helpful.
Yeah.
At least for him.
I felt like I gave some good advice.
Well, that's awesome.
So what's on your mind?
Well, kind of relating back to the e-myth.
Okay.
If that's our through topic.
Yeah, sure.
Those three areas of self when it comes to being an entrepreneur, the technician, the manager, and the entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't really define the manager or the entrepreneur so much. So in my mind, and I think the way the book describes it too, the entrepreneur is sort of big picture, the vision, the idea, the one always looking for an opportunity.
Right.
And the manager is sort of the one putting all the pieces together and, you know, in a more nuts and bolts sense, managing the employees. But in the world of solopreneurs, you don't really have employees to manage. But I do think you actually do have employees to manage because everything that has to be done is a specific job
yeah.
that you are doing. And different versions of yourself is doing that job, whether it's the technician end of things or the entrepreneur end of things. And the manager has to balance all of that and organize all of it and make sure it's all working together towards one goal.
Yeah. So you have a lot of experience as a manager in your professional past.
Yeah, but it was more...
It's more like a firefighter.
Yeah, managing problems.
Yeah.
And I realized that while I might be an okay manager, maybe that's my best area, which I don't like the idea of that being my strongest area. It's not something I like. I don't like managing employees.
Right.
And I don't have to worry about that with my, you know, current entrepreneurial adventure.
Yeah.
Or my day job for that matter, too much. But a couple of things that are pain points for me is one, for the first time in my life, I'm thinking about this business and constant improvement. When you're an employee or a technician, you're not thinking that way. You're just doing your job and not really thinking about the why.
Right. So in the book, it talks about like, if you're the technician, you see the future of the business through the present. Right.
Right.
So like your conception of what the future of this business will be is just basically an extension of what you're doing in the present. The entrepreneur sees the present as a path to the future.
Right.
That's already envisioned.
And so, the manager kind of helps get from point A to point B.
The manager kind of mediates between the two, I would say, to a certain extent.
Right. So my struggle is, where do I focus my efforts? Because on one hand, do I try and manage my time and my different duties between the business and my day job? Do I stay focused on the big picture and think about the future? In which case, I've learned that doing that more so ends up neglecting the present, whether it be technician duties or regular day job duties. Another area I feel deficient in is the technician end of things because I've been more focused on the big picture. And I've always struggled to see the big picture. I've always struggled to set those long-term goals.
Yeah.
And that's an area that I feel like I'm really plowing ahead in.
Well, you're pretty disciplined with your time. So when this idea was introduced to me, you know, it became very clear to me that like, okay, there are these three aspects to me. I definitely suck at one of them, managing, right? I'm a very good technician and I really enjoy being a technician or, you know, I mean, I'll go out on a limb and call it, you know, a kind of artistry, if that's,
yeah.
You know, and when we talk about your show, like I'm very into like, how can this be better? What's some creative thing we can do? So I suck at the one that you're good at. And the entrepreneurial one is, it came later. Like once I realized I didn't have time to work anymore, at my job that was very time consuming.
You sort of push yourself into
that
position.
I pushed myself into this will be my job then. I would say in retrospect, hastily. Right, I definitely probably should have worked for a couple more years. So I was sitting there today, and this to your question, I was like, maybe I should sit down and outline my responsibilities as it relates to each one of these. What are my responsibilities as a technician? What are my responsibilities as a manager now? And what are my responsibilities as an entrepreneur? Or what are my activities as an entrepreneur? Right. The other way that you could, so that gives you at least a map, right, of your range of responsibilities and expectations for yourself in these three roles right now with this. Is that valuable? Do you feel like you have that clarified?
The way I see it valuable, at least from the manager's perspective, is I would break it up into different versions of myself with different duties. And then I would look at all of those and go, who would I fire? That guy we need to focus on. That guy we need to improve.
All right. Yeah, I think a more product. Okay. Yeah. So I think that's a valuable exploration to do, right? Because I need to do that too.
Right. And that's why actually it came to mind was thinking about your different duties and the way you could sort of think about it in more of a managerial role.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my manager would be in jail, I think, for like some kind of negligence.
And I'm not saying it's just three, you know, versions of yourself or three different types of duties, because you have a website guy who does all the techie website stuff. You have a recording guy. You have the talent guy. You have the editor.
I do have actual other people who do things too that mm-hmm. I'm not doing a great job of managing right now.
Right.
Because, you know, like I started this relationship with this guy that was going to be, this was middle of last year, that was going to be a partnership. You know, like I had a way for him to get paid, and eventually it just kind of had to dissolve because I didn't have a vision for what I want. It involved YouTube. And now I'm actually thinking about reviving this project because I do have a vision mm-hmm. that actually came to me while I was putting the board together. So, yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate that people were willing to, you know, sometimes exchange their time for very little compensation. This guy probably was going to get the best deal. Some people have volunteered their time and their energy.
The problem with that is you can't have any expectations out of free work.
But you can still be a good guide.
Sure.
Right? And they probably would stick around longer and be less frustrated if you had a really compelling vision for them. Because they already believe so much in what you're doing that they want to volunteer their help.
So maybe you need to set out time whenever it is and be that manager. Lay out your tasks for your employees, whether it's a self-employee or a volunteer or a partner. Lay out those tasks and expectations and go, this is what I want to have done by the end of the week. And one thing you're going to learn in that process is what realistically can get accomplished.
Right.
Like set out a task list that is unachievable and how much of it gets accomplished on a consistent basis by individual A versus self B versus individual C.
So yeah, and you're bringing somebody on to work with you.
Yeah, I just started this week and this is something I'm struggling with too. So I am happy to pay them enough to make it worth their while. But when I'm paying them a decent amount, I am not going to hesitate to start throwing a bunch of stuff their way and let them organize how to input it and how mm-hmm. to accomplish it. But getting going, I can't have too many expectations because there's such a learning curve. There's so much to teach. Right. Fortunately, the individual that I've taken on as a virtual assistant, she's very smart, and I have no doubt that she can pick up on a lot of these things quickly, but I'm relying on her to do the things that I'm deficient at and that I don't get around to doing enough. But one struggle I have is how much do I throw that direction?
Well, I think it's a test, right? It starts with a certain amount and with, you know, a clear communication of your expectation that it will increase,
right? Right.
So obviously, I think you want to show somebody the whole map, right? Like here's everything that's going on and we're going to start you here. But then I'd like to incorporate this. Like it's a fixed amount of time. So it's not like, yeah, hey, I'll pay you this much every week and event, and you're just going to have this endlessly expanding workload. It's like, you know, as time goes on, we'll distribute your time between more things. Is that?
Yeah. So what I did to start off, we had a nice long meeting where we went through kind of initial startup familiarization issues. And I have broken down into three categories that I want her to focus on. One is my CRM management, which is my customer, you know, tracking software.
CRM is customer relations management.
Right.
So usually a system software that does this. Yeah.
Right. It just keeps track of all the hard facts, customer names, email addresses, phone numbers, addresses, all of that, accounts, and all the different people within those accounts. The important aspect of it is tracking deals. So when I go out and I have a meeting with somebody and they go, yeah, I'm interested in this. Budgets are coming around, you know, this summer and we might be able to buy it then. I'll put it through to purchasing. Give me a quote. Things like that, meetings like that, I need to take that information and store it somewhere. But I'm so focused on, great, I'm going to sell you on this idea. Now I'm moving on to the next customer. I'm going to try and sell them on a similar idea too. And for all the work I do on the road, there's a bunch of back-end work that needs to get done to track this and basically systematize the sales process, which I never get around to doing thoroughly enough. Mm-hmm. So my CRM, basically my organizational structure, is very chaotic and disorganized. And it's always looming over me, and it's something I have to get to, but it's so easy to justify going after new business or working on the latest and loudest. So that's one area I'm having her focus on. Another area is basically research into what's going on in my territory with my accounts or potential accounts to focus my efforts and my visits where they're more effective or more useful. Whoever has money.
Right.
Or who's getting money.
Yeah.
Or has potential to get money.
Yeah.
Or aligning funding sources with certain types of customers.
So, and then you can kind of break it into a money now, like categories, right? Like money now. So maybe that they become urgent and important.
Mm-hmm.
Money soon, and then maybe even like a distant, like lots of money eventually.
It helps prioritize my time and my efforts while on the road, as opposed to me just going, well, I haven't been up to the Erie, Pennsylvania area in a while. Let's hit up some accounts up there.
It's like farming, right? There's a system to farming. The farmer doesn't go and say, oh, let's go see what's going on in the cornfield.
Yeah.
He knows when there's going to be fucking corn.
Right.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I think that's a great idea. It actually reminds me, just back to your bigger picture here as well. I had Zach on the show today. The topic was how to find the right mentor and convince that person that, you know, you'd be worth working with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that he said was find somebody who's busy, find a way to add value, find the tasks, you know, you can do for this person that their time is too valuable to do for themselves. Right.
I actually did a version of this recently.
But your opportunity cost, yeah, you this is basically how it was helpful in you getting to where you are now.
Extraordinarily.
You had a mentor in the Airbnb area who helped you out a lot, who liked your enthusiasm, gave you free advice pretty much, right?
I mean, I did and work
you,
for the guy.
And you worked for the in exchange, you know, you did work. You showed that you had value and it was worth having a relationship with you, mm-hmm. aside from the fact that you're just a nice man. So, you know, that's the pitch that he was talking about. Now you can go in warm where like maybe you have a couple of mutual connections like you had with this guy, right? We had dinner together before. I mean, this idea for you kind of partially, I would say, hatched out of your interactions with him and seeing what he was doing. I mean, you might have had aspirations to go into business for yourself or even for real estate, but it seemed like he helped you focus in on a specific way of doing it here. Is that fair?
Okay. Absolutely.
So that was a warm lead that you had into a mentorship relationship with him. He was related to somebody you work with.
And this is actually ultra applicable in the real estate world too. The mentor relationship, I think, is far more necessary in that world than almost any other area.
Now, did you ever say, I want you to mentor me?
No.
No. But it just kind of now
he volunteered it.
Okay.
And for as busy as he is and as much as he has going on, I mean, he has businesses, he has real estate deals happening all the time. He's traveling. He's got a family.
He's
got family health issues.
Yeah.
He's got so many things happening. The guy always finds time to talk. We talked for an hour and a half yesterday.
Okay. So that's great. He has accessibility. But if it was a cold relationship where you just identify him as like, I want to be like this guy. You know, Zach was saying, look, your website doesn't have an email opt-in. So I made you one. and I made you this PDF that you can give away.
You have to provide something more tangible.
You show people that you have value. But that involves a bit of research in, you know, identifying what their needs are or what their deficits are compared to maybe their competitors if it's a competitive industry. And the point is, you're familiar with like the priority quadrants, like Stephen Covey's book. So you have urgent and important, urgent, not important, important, not urgent, and not urgent, not important, which I guess would be like porn. What fits in that category? Is it things that are just like totally valueless for work?
Yeah, or things that are so far off in the future, you can't see any immediate results from even pursuing that idea.
And they don't have enough of a shape to even devote time to.
Right.
Okay. So maybe
like beyond someday, maybe.
So, all right. So you could give yourself two maps. The first one being the sort of three roles that you have to play in working for yourself. And then a second map of, even if it's just taking the same information and putting it into a different kind of matrix, where should you spend your time? Because I just know from my experience, it's really easy to shift into something that's not urgent or not important, away from something that is urgent or is important, but still something that needs to be done, and tell myself that I'm still being productive.
Right.
Because no one is ever going to come and say, you're wasting time. This is bullshit. This isn't what you should be doing. I can always feel, I could leave the room and go pick up a book and just start reading and be like, this is show prep for a show I'm going to do someday, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe defining, like giving yourself that other kind of map would be helpful too. I don't know.
Well, I don't think I fall victim to that as much anymore. You know, before closing on this property and before getting, you know, far down this road, I think I fell victim to that because I didn't know what would be most useful,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay, I could learn about short-term rentals, or I could learn about real estate, or I could learn about the local market. There's a million different things I could learn about, and they all have value in some form or another, but what's most valuable right now? That was much harder to define. Right now, I can prioritize pretty well, but these are all competing priorities with regular day job work, technician level work about getting certain projects wrapped up that just eat up time, and, you know, progressing the business forward. It seems like the most important thing is to make this business as successful as possible, and that feels really good, but it's coming at the expense of I'm neglecting regular work, which is why I'm bringing on this virtual assistant. So I do free up time while still making progress at regular work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've fallen in love with the idea of front-loading work now to streamline things later.
Yeah.
That is, I think, an evolution of my 18-month ongoing exercise in self-discipline.
Yeah.
So like the virtual assistant thing, it's a lot of work front-loaded for no immediate results. Those results are going to come sometime in the future. The problem is it's coming in conjunction with a whole bunch of front-loaded work with the business and the property too.
But it is also availing you time.
Eventually it will.
Well, I mean, it's kind of availing you time now because those are your responsibilities currently.
Yes, but...
But you're neglecting them.
I would have been neglecting them now 6 months ago or any time. So the problem is the sales cycle is very slow, so it will take a while to actually see legitimate results from that. From
how
those
much
efforts.
Longer do you want to work at the job that you have?
That's a good question too, because if I look back to when I was a strict manager at a company and my job was to manage and then fill in technician duties when needed, which was way more often than I should have.
Yeah,
that life was awful. All my mental energy went into completing the job as quickly as I could to be done with it.
And just have like a tiny bit of free time. Yeah.
Yeah. To have a tiny bit of free time to go home, watch a movie, enjoy a meal, actually eat some food and not just whatever I could get from a gas station, get some sleep, any of those things. I was constantly spending every ounce of energy to maximize the amount of time I wasn't working.
Right.
It was an awful life. And eventually I switched to a job that allowed me a lot of freedom, a pay cut, but a lot of freedom. And that was addicting. That was 5 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
I switched to another job where I have even more freedom, but also there's a lot more risk and stress because there's no one to support me if I don't do a good job.
Right.
If I don't sell, I don't get paid.
Yep.
And that isn't fully within my control. I'm beholden to customers. I'm spending time, you know, trying to entertain customers that may or may not actually pay me anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea doesn't feel as good as working in the real estate world. And on top of that, getting cash flow in the short term where I'm not dealing with anybody until they've already agreed to pay.
Yeah. I mean, so in the real estate world, you have a very clear formula for success, right? This is something, this is the process and it's replicatable.
And it's, I see it as a potential exponential growth.
Exactly. I'm very sorry.
Brett's phone's ringing. But, the freedom that I got by that first job change and then the further job change to my current one, and now the thought of focusing on this business, the freedom is addicting. And yeah. When I thought about the big picture and what do I want, I just started formulating this in my head. But what I want is that freedom to want to be working. Like, it feels so much better to want to be working than it does to want to get work done as quickly as possible, to be not working as soon as possible.
Right.
Like, that is a huge, huge difference and a huge shift. And it's not about the money. It really isn't. Like, right now, financially, on paper, I'm doing much worse because I've been doing so much spending.
Mm-hmm.
And I have reduced my life. I just bought a laptop. That's the most expensive thing I've bought outside of a car in the past 12 months.
Yeah.
I don't buy things for myself. I have sacrificed. I have a 5-bedroom house, but I've relegated myself to living in a little studio apartment I built in the basement that is not a very comfortable area. I have a whole house I could be using, but I'm choosing not to because, again, sacrifice now for reward later.
Mm-hmm.
I sacrifice now because I don't even want to make the house messy and have anything to clean.
Right, yeah.
So I'm staying in that basement and working down there all day in front of a space heater. It's kind of crazy, but it feels good. And on one hand, I feel like the faster I can get to doing that full time,
yeah,
the happier I'm going to be. On the other hand, it seems like a crazy risk. And in doing that, I'm neglecting regular work. And I want to find a way to do both. And I don't know if the goal is to shift from one to the other as soon as possible. I don't know if the goal is to balance both of them. It's very hard to define. I want to be successful in my regular job, but the results seem more immediate on the business end of things.
Right. But there's never, like, you know, with your job, there isn't like a blast and cruise kind of phase where, like, it seems like the amount of work that you do is always going to be consistent, right? Because you have things that are short term.
Or I can always do more. Always.
Right, right, right. So even if you are scouting way into the future to make deals with schools, you can always be scouting way into the future to do that. So you can always have the same responsibilities. But in this, if you blasted right now in real estate for, you know, 2 or 3 years, you would have more freedom to cruise when you want to. And then that idea of saying, oh, I want to go back to work, you would be able to remove yourself from work at times.
And also, I'm realizing I don't possess any skill that is irreplaceable. There is nothing that I do that anyone else couldn't do if they really tried. I think the difference is more so in my life today, and I think I would like to think this is a trait of an entrepreneur, is trying to improve the whole situation. When you're an employee, you're never thinking about improving things. You're just thinking about doing the job and doing it well.
Right.
You're not thinking about improving the process. You're not thinking about, you know, how do we make more money on this? How do we expedite this? How do we become more efficient? That's not really part of it. And that's all I'm thinking about. And that's what I like thinking about.
Right.
Is, okay, what's this person doing down the street? I like what they're doing there. I can do that and I can do it better.
Mm-hmm.
What's their weakness? What's their strength? And I don't look at my competitors as a bunch of pieces of shit. I look at them as people who are skilled in some area or another. And looking at those three different types of people listed in the E-Myth, kind of looking through that lens, I can identify strengths and weaknesses in people. And that allows me to try to model myself after their good traits.
Yeah.
Whether I'm effective at doing that or not, it's a different story. And whether I'm successful or not, it's a different story. But it kind of feels good to look at things like that, and it's more positive overall, too.
Yeah, and you realize that once you can kind of do those audits on other people, you know, or those evaluations of their strengths and weaknesses, you see that, okay, well, And it's a little different from industry to industry. Being a good technician doesn't make you successful.
No.
You know? Or being good at management doesn't make you happy and serene.
No.
And being, you know, a visionary entrepreneur doesn't guarantee anything.
Like, yeah, in a lot of cases, it makes you broke.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Or worse.
Yeah.
Broke is zero.
Yeah, makes you in debt and people you know in debt.
Yeah, absolutely.
People that you partnered with.
So I appreciate your suggestion of reading this book. It is actually helping me do some important self-evaluation about the work that I do. And I think the follow-up would be to finish it. You're almost done with it.
I finished it.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay. By the next time we meet, I will finish it. And I'm really interested in, you know, I mean, right now I'm in the problems part of the book.
Right.
Where you can actually get, I think it is good for that sort of self-evaluation. But I'm really interested in what it presents in the latter half of the book as far as like actually making a plan to correct this. So when that's done, we can do like a part two on the E-Myth.
And sounds good to me.
All right. How long did we record for today?
53 minutes.
But that's
it? A few minutes of not the actual show during the recording.
That's a short one. What else could we do? I only gave you a couple of suggestions. So if you want to talk for a little bit more about problems, I could try to help.
I mean, the problems are all kind of good problems.
I agree.
I guess the issue is I need someone to help identify where I'm most efficient and if I should really continue going after the goal or should I get back more into reality.
Well, I think you can, based on the suggestions I gave, I think you can help yourself identify where you're most efficient by mapping your responsibilities by these three categories, but then also putting your responsibilities into, like, if you find you're spending like too much time in urgent, not important, or important, not urgent, then that's information that's useful. You can self-evaluate. Well, I mean, who would be the outside person aside from your mentor who would be, you know, capable of doing what you're asking?
Well, the mentor is very bullish on everything.
Right.
And that's great and super encouraging, but not encouraging on the regular work thing.
Does he want you to quit?
No, we don't talk about it because he's not part of that world.
So it's a life balance that he doesn't have.
Right.
Right.
And so I guess reality is focusing more on work, but going after the goal is steering away from work.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting back to the realization of there's nothing that I do that anyone else couldn't do, that is also kind of empowering because all those different little versions of myself that are different employees for different reasons and different tasks, different technicians or managers, those can all be done by somebody else. So if I do succeed in one area or another, I can grow and I can share those duties and tasks with other people.
Right.
I don't have to give up on one thing or another, but I can, you know, manage someone else doing that. And that other person can't be irreplaceable either.
And that's a good position to be in. You mean can be replaceable?
Right. I don't want that person to be irreplaceable.
Exactly. So that's a great position to be in where, you know, I'm doing something where I'm the only person who could do it,
mm-hmm.
right? I built something around my story and my personality. So I'm kind of like stuck
right.
doing that. And that what that means, as he talks about in the E-Myth, is that I own a job, right? I'm the owner of a job.
Yeah.
Now, there is a way that I could do less eventually. There is a way that I could make the whole SSP thing more passive. Right now, it's very, very active. And one of the things, and this is a trap that I'm trying to get out of, is Patreon, right? Patreon just incentivizes you to work, right? Because it pays you for work. You're paid per content item,
right?
Right. So I can get X amount of dollars, and sometimes I scramble at the end of the month, right, to get two more things up. That is definitely being wage dependent when there are ways to devote the same amount of time and the same amount of effort to things that could be passive income, like courses, right? So you are in a good position where you could eventually, if you're successful enough, extract yourself from every single one of these micro management
duties.
Roles
yeah.
or micro technical roles that you have to do now. You've already taken a step by bringing somebody else in to
right.
handle some of it.
And that's the thing, because I can clearly define, okay, these are the tasks that kind of are not getting addressed and where we need to focus. With the business end of things, I don't have that information. I don't have that data. I don't have, okay, here's what's taking up the most amount of time, or here's what needs to get done but never seems to get done.
Right.
I don't have that information yet, so I can't outsource that.
Right.
And I don't want to abdicate responsibility to anybody else. I just want to be able to focus my efforts where they're going to be most effective. And
right.
I know that those areas that I've outsourced to the virtual assistant, CRM maintenance, research, and the other area which we didn't get into, marketing, those are the three areas that I never, no matter how much free time I give myself, I never find the time to focus on those areas.
Right, because they're too off.
And maybe, when I yeah. do, I'm not very good at it.
Right.
So that's what I'm outsourcing, hoping that helps support that side of my income. And one, focuses my efforts, and two, makes my efforts more impactful, meaning earns more money.
So another thing you said is, I need somebody who can tell me like where I'm deficient.
Yes.
So you, and this actually brings up something else that I talked about with Zach today. This was focused on young people who are trying to get, you know, their start in the professional world. And we made a distinction between teachers, like people you hire to mm-hmm. teach you some specific thing. Like if you went and took some real estate course, mentors, which is what we described with your friend from out of state.
Yep.
And advisors. And advisors can be anybody, you know, like I've advised you on things, even though I only know a small part of what you're trying to do. But another advisory relationship that you're forming is this virtual assistant is not somebody in India. It's somebody you actually know.
Yeah.
Right? It's somebody you have a relationship with. So if she understands the big picture of what you're trying to do, you can actually go to this person and say, hey, what are you seeing?
Right. And I actually, I laid that out ahead of time. I said,
yeah.
look, if you see a way that we can be more efficient, a way to make this more effective, get creative. Please feel free to make this your own, because your way of doing these things could very well be better than my way of doing these things.
Mm-hmm. And she probably would have no problem giving you constructive criticism.
No, not at all.
Comfortable relationship.
Yep.
So yeah, that's a good relationship to have. But you can also, you know, you're going to these real estate meetups.
Yep.
Those take on an advisory role too, even though a lot of those people, they might not be trying to do the same things. They might not have, you know, the same breadth of experience or vice versa that you have or they have. And, you know, you can take what you need and leave the rest behind.
Well, one thing I've learned about like the real estate world, that there is such a wealth of knowledge out there from experience and people that even if the topic seems completely irrelevant to what I'm doing, it's still beneficial knowledge.
Sure.
Because maybe I'm not acting on that today, but maybe I am 10 years from now, 5 years from now, a year from now.
Or it's perspective, or it just kind of like zooms out and shows you a bigger picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because with real estate, there's a bunch of different strategies. The short-term rental thing is a unique strategy, and I've carved out a niche within that niche, actually. I'm coming to learn more and more, which is great. But if for some reason the market gets flooded with other versions of me out there, and then it becomes a race to the bottom price-wise, maybe I shift my efforts to something else.
Right.
Maybe I get rid of this property and I rent traditionally.
Yeah, sure.
By replacing it with a bunch of row houses in the ghetto.
Nice.
And then I just chase down tenants with a gun trying to collect rent. Who knows?
I love it.
Yeah. But there's a lot of different alternatives and different paths I could take. And in a perfect world, I have multiple different real estate income streams
mm-hmm.
and ways to hide money from the government through real estate, which is very effective, because what better raise is there than not paying taxes?
Yeah.
And on top of that, when I think about what would I like to be doing, if you had asked me a couple years ago, I never would have thought it was going to be real estate or any of this stuff, but I would love to own multiple properties across this city that I've come to love more and more. But more importantly, I don't want to manage a big company. I don't want to grow the company to where I'm managing a bunch of employees, because then my role isn't, you know, working on a business. It's managing people. And I don't want to get back into that. I know I don't. But what I do know I like is I like working with my friends. So if I could create a situation where I could partner with friends and we could all work together and play off each other's strengths, that would be a dream come true.
All right. Let's call it Puke in the Gang. Let's call it something else. That's not a good name.
And that I just don't know would be, could be lucrative enough to incentivize.
It doesn't fit into your map right now, I don't think.
It doesn't.
I mean, it's definitely something that could make more money. It definitely is something that could be a reliable income stream, but not without a lot of work. And you just don't have the bandwidth.
I don't, and I feel bad for that.
Like if I was doing something in the gym, lifting weights, and you came and started putting more weights on me,
yeah,
I would be fucking really mad.
Yeah,
if you did that. So I understand. And the most important thing, as far as lifestyle balance is concerned, is right now the show is fun. It's a creative outlet. It's a vent for a lot of shit that happens in our life, where we make lemonade. You know about this, how you take lemons?
No.
Oh, you've never heard this?
No.
Okay.
Explain.
There's a saying, mm-hmm. when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. And you're
I don't get it.
Okay. Lemons.
I like lemons as they are.
Oh, wow. That's really the right approach.
I don't care for lemonade.
That's
pink,
very
pink
stoic.
Lemonade. I know that's very lame, but I like pink lemonade.
That's very well, what I'm saying is I don't want to torture this metaphor.
How many lemons?
It varies. It's just you turn each one into like a sweeter beverage.
Do I have to convert them all to lemonade, or can I keep some of the lemons as they are?
You know,
because at least with a lemon, I can play catch with myself. Like if I was locked in a jail cell and you said, okay, you can have a lemon or you can have lemonade, I'll take the lemon.
Because you can
every
catch
time.
With yourself.
Exactly.
And then have a drink.
And if I get mad enough, I can throw it at the door and smash it on the wall and
yeah.
smear it. And it smells nice. But the lemonade smells nice too, but the lemonade is going to get ultra sticky. So lemon every time.
Yeah. And I mean, if the lemonade, you don't have the rind anymore. Because one of the things I like to do when I'm done with the lemon mm-hmm. is take the rind and put it on my head like a yarmulke.
Oh.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Lemonade, you don't even have that option.
No, it's like a tropical yarmulke.
Well, sounds like you really have the right attitude. Like, your attitude is so good that this metaphor doesn't even... Anyway,
my attitude is, don't make lemonade. When life gives you lemons, be happy.
Wow. Very stoic.
Yep.
So, you know, we take problems and we take our own problems and frustrations and we turn them into other people's entertainment and our entertainment in the meantime. And that's a very nice gift to ourselves and to other people. And it's something that we should cherish. And I think I love that. I love that we're able to do that. To be able to convert tragedy into joy is a wonderful thing.
And I really like that we have some amount of very dedicated listeners, no matter how little that amount is. Each one of those listeners is my little lemon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very sweet.
Yeah.
But, well, it's sour, but...
It is, but, you know, also, if I had too many lemons, what am I going to do with all these fucking lemons?
Right.
So...
Make yeah. lemonade?
I don't really... It seems like a waste of effort.
It's good to have options.
Coffee beans to coffee. That's a better analogy.
Yeah. Coffee beans are gross.
Right. Until you make coffee out of them.
Oh, what a treat. Okay. So thanks for listening, everybody. This has been meeting number 9 of the Discomfort Zone. And we will reconvene soon to talk about the rest of the E-Myth. Bye.